Hey everyone, where are you headed?
The Pride Parade!
The Pride Parade? That sounds great. But have you ever been to a heterosexual Pride Parade?
Heterosexual Pride Parade? No way!
Way? Hi, my name is Eric. Did you know that heterosexuals have been contributing members to society for years? That's right. Some quite well-known people have, in fact, been heterosexual. Benito Mussolini, Ann Coulter, Donald Trump, just to name a few. Here at the Foundation for Awareness of Heterosexual Persons, we have been working with these fascinating individuals for years. Listen to what some of our members have to say.
Heterosexuals can be very nice people.
Just look what one gave to me.
FAHP helped me when I learned that my very own parents were heterosexuals.
I'm not afraid of heterosexuals anymore. Most of them just want to be left alone.
And that's not all. Did you know that with the exception of Neil Patrick Harris, every single person in Hollywood is heterosexual? That's right. So the next time you march, why not do it in the company of heterosexuals?
What we're calling lavender reflections that we're incorporating in service. Lavender is a color that has long been associated with lesbian and gay people. I actually don't know where lavender began, but I do know that when Harvey Milk signed the bill into law when he was president, when he was mayor of San Francisco, he made a point of signing it with a lavender pen. So the first lavender reflection is about the pink triangle. The pink triangle was used to identify and single out gay men in Nazi concentration camps. Different colored triangles identified different prisoners. Purple triangles for Jehovah's Witnesses, red for political prisoners, green for professional criminals, pink for gay men, as well as other sexual offenders, including rapists and pedophiles and more. And I say other sexual offenders because gay men were considered sexual offenders under the law. Homosexuality was made illegal in Germany in 1871 in a provision of the German Criminal Code known as paragraph 175. The law was rarely enforced until the rise of the Nazi Party and the infamous Night of the Long Knives in 1933. Gay organizations were banned, and research into sexuality was prohibited, and books burned. Gay men were arrested, imprisoned, and sent to concentration camps. Those within the Nazi Party itself were executed. An estimated 100,000 men were arrested, with 50,000 officially charged, and an estimated 15,000 were sent to the camps. Many prisoners were experimented on in apparent attempts to cure their homosexuality. Those who wore the pink triangle were seen as the lowest of the low in the prison camp caste system. Gay men were frequently targeted by guards for beatings and torture for sport, while hundreds of other prisoners, horrified, looked on. The end of the war saw a great liberating of the prisoners of the death camps. Those wearing the pink triangle, however, were frequently sent right back to prison, as paragraph 175 remained in place. The pink triangle was established as a pro-gay symbol by activists in the United States in the 1970s. The appropriation of the triangle was a conscious attempt to transform a symbol of humiliation into one of solidarity and resistance. By the outset of the AIDS epidemic, it was well entrenched as a symbol of gay pride and liberation. Before Hitler rose to power, however, Berlin saw a great flourishing of artistic, social, personal, and sexual freedom, as well as scientific and psychological advances. In the time beginning directly after World War I, artists, musicians, writers, poets, and performers were finding new, exciting ways to express themselves. In 1920, Kurt Schwabach and Misha Spolyansky wrote Das Lila Lied, The Lavender Song, one of the world's first gay liberation anthems.
The Stonewall Uprising. June 27, 1969 was an unbearably hot, humid summer night. The scattered patrons at New York Stonewall Inn were sweating it out, nursing drinks, and mourning the passing of one of their most beloved icons, Judy Garland. At about 1 a.m., a squad of police entered, armed with a warrant, and began roughing up patrons. 13 people were arrested, including several employees and individuals violating New York's gender-appropriate clothing statute. This was routine. Bars that were known to be havens for LGBTQ folk were raided on a regular basis, partly to punish bar owners for not paying for protection, partly out of a sense of acting for common decency, but mostly to show queer folk they didn't belong, even in the private clubs where they gathered, like the Stonewall Inn. These raids had happened on a weekly basis for years, but that hot, humid, muggy night, something changed. Not tonight, you don't. Judy's dead, and it's just too freaking hot. As he was pushing a lesbian into the paddy wagon, a police officer hit her on the head in front of a crowd of onlookers. "Oh my God, do something," she shouted. And the crowd did. They began pushing back, at first throwing objects like pennies and flowers, but eventually hurling bottles, rocks, and cobblestones as the astonished police began fighting back. A full-blown riot broke out, a fray that would take 6 days to quell. Several AP photos show transgender folk often leading the charge, swinging purses, raising fists, and holding up signs. When the Village Voice published its account of the riots, a new wave of "Oh no, you don't" arose, giving voice to thousands of LGBTQ patrons who decades had been beaten, arrested, humiliated, and had lives destroyed for no other crime than daring to show up in public as queer. Though the Stonewall Uprising didn't officially start the LGBTQ rights movement, it was a galvanizing moment for queer folk in the U.S. and eventually the world. This event led to numerous gay rights organizations, including the Gay Liberation Front, the Human Rights Campaign, GLAAD, and PFLAG. In 2016, President Barack Obama designated the Stonewall Inn, Christopher Park, and the surrounding streets and sidewalks a national monument in recognition of the area's contribution to LGBTQ and human rights. In honor of the Stonewall Uprising and in honor of the gay icon who introduced the song, we would like to sing the gay national anthem, "Somewhere Over the Rainbow." Judy, this one's for you.
Church is a place of sanctuary, a place where one can worship and sing with others, quietly reflect and listen to the small, still voice inside. However, for many LGBTQ people, church has been a place of isolation, alienation, fear, and even abuse. The Westboro Baptist Church was famous for its lurid "God hates fags" signs, and while most mainstream congregations have been quick to distance themselves from this hateful polemic, how different is it, really, for these more moderate denominations to say, "It's okay to be gay, just don't act on it." The result is the same. To sit in the house of God and hear how God finds you fundamentally wrong is psychologically, emotionally, and spiritually devastating. But starting in the 1980s, many churches began a long, sometimes painful process of accepting all members of the human family. What began as a small list of a few brave, forward-thinking churches has grown to a list of more than 40 denominations, the UUA, of course, being right at the very top of the statistical list. At the bottom, at the bottom are Jehovah's Witnesses, Assemblies of God, Southern Baptists, and Mormons, with LGBTQ acceptance ranking in the single digits. But while progress is being made across the boards with most churches, there are some alarming new trends happening outside church walls in recent years. 2016 was the deadliest year on record for the LGBTQ community. with a 17% increase of hate killings from the previous year. Of the violent crimes reported in 2016 by LGBTQ people, 79% were people of color, 68% were transgender. In 2017 alone, more than 100 anti-LGBT bills were introduced in 29 states. This trend is continuing in 2018 at an alarming rate, with an onslaught of license to discriminate bills being presented. Several have already passed in North and South Dakota, Texas, Kansas, Mississippi, Alabama, Tennessee, Michigan, and Virginia, which apparently is no longer for lovers. LGBTQ people have long felt like outcasts in traditional churches. I would like to make a proposal. Let us be extravagantly welcoming to all in the human family. Let us go overboard with offering sanctuary from a world that can be a very dangerous place for LGBTQ folk. Let's go out of our way to make LGBTQ people feel not like outcasts, but like incasts. As a child, my paternal grandmother was the center of my world. She was an artist, a painter. She had many interesting friends, some of whom were quite eccentric. She loved them all with all their differences. She made it okay to love different kinds of people. I learned this concept by example, and it not only made it easier to accept and love others who were different, but it opened the door to acceptance and love of myself as well. Music is at the center of my soul. I have been singing since I can remember. My first public performance was a duet with my grandmother on a Sunday in church when I was about 3 1/2. She stood in the pew and I stood on the pew. Turn your eyes upon Jesus. Look full in his wonderful face, and the things of earth will grow strangely dim in the light of his glory and grace. That was the entire repertoire. I was just 3 after all. For many of us who sing or play instruments, we learned these things in church. Many of us left our churches, and I was no exception. But there was one thing I knew without fail. God would not give me a voice if I were not worthy of God's love. Later, I found an open and affirming congregation at Finley Street Christian Church, and I sang my heart out again. In 1995, I joined my first gay and lesbian chorus, and for the next 21 years, I would sing in big gay choruses with a couple of small ensembles thrown in for good measure. And during those years, my identity in my LGBTQ community was just that, a performer who worked in production and even sometimes wrote music for my choruses. From the chorus risers, I had a front row seat to watch great strides made in equality. After each concert, chorus members go out into the front of the house and greet audience members. My conversations with young people were the most profound for me. Some had never seen so many people like them on stage. They'd never heard music sung proudly that reflected their lives, struggles, and their triumphs. Some would be crying and need a hug. Always there were smiles. The young person who comes to understand that they are lovable just as they are, and the 3-year-old you teach with a loving example, can become adults who shine those realities out to the world. Each of us has the power to create these circumstances. I'll be holding on to this as I figure out my next chapter in my community and in the world.
I still remember when and where it all happened. April 1994, Sydney, Australia. I was on a business trip with Microsoft. I sat in a non-memorable hotel room. There had been so many. This particular day was on the weekend, so I had some downtime. Yet here I was sitting on the edge of the bed contemplating life, wondering why at 29 years old I was in freaking Sydney, Australia, with time on my hands and on Microsoft's dime. And yet there I was sitting in this hotel room instead of out on a walkabout through the red light district, getting to know the lay of the land and its beautiful people. How was it that I still wasn't happy? I remember talking out loud and asking myself, Ronald, what is wrong? Why aren't you happy? What more do you want? Without skipping a beat, the answer came to me so quickly and so precisely that it shocked me to my core, yet at the same time filled me with a warm and comforting glow. I wanted a man. I could still feel the grin on my face. That was the day that I truly became all that is who I was meant to be. I wanted a man to share my wonderful life with. I was on a mission, and I had a knack for getting what I wanted. So I was stoked, to say the least. And from then on, I went home and initiated a beautiful, wonderful, challenging, scary, and exciting life as a black gay male. I knew that I was embarking life as a multiple minority in the United States of America. I was born in Phoenix, Arizona. I was the middle child of three kids, my brother 4 years older than me, my sister 1 year younger. I had two wonderful parents who taught me everything that I needed to know to be successful, strong-willed, confident, and ready for the world. As the middle child, I did everything differently. Today, I live in the Seattle area, and they are all still in Phoenix. I always said that I've lived in Seattle longer than I lived in Phoenix, but I still call Phoenix home because that's where my mother is. We buried my mother 4 days ago. It's been a tough couple of months, which is why some of you haven't seen me in the choir, but I'm back now, and I want to thank you for the support and the condolences. I grew up in a loving, supportive family. I worked at a tech company that was out of the norm progressive when being progressive wasn't a thing. I lived in a city, for the most part, where it did its best at trying to be progressive. And as an adult, I have a solid support group of friends that I consider family. They consist of a healthy mix of both gay and straight, single and married, white and black. All of that has led me to the man that I am today. When I look back today to look at how I became or how I got here, I know that much of it has been due to my strong desire to be the better man, to love the life along the higher road, a cup half full versus a cup half empty. But to live that life and have that belief takes strength, courage, and a strong will to keep believing that things can be better. When I came out to my parents, I was terrified. I thought they'd let me go. Yet in the back of my mind, I knew that that wouldn't happen. While I was struggling to get the words out, my mom sat there looking right at me, nodding her head up and down, because she knew. FYI, your mother knows. My father sat at his computer, not looking at me, pretending to be focused on whatever was on the screen. But in the end, they both told me that although they were from a different generation and didn't get it, they still loved me and always would. That was all I needed to hear. From that day on, I didn't just come out of the closet. I took that door off and made a cute little dining room table out of it. I stay involved in what makes me happy. At Microsoft, I was a founding member and president of BAM, which was Blacks at Microsoft, a diversity organization that still exists today and is one of the prominent organizations among their many diversity groups. That experience introduced me to another diversity organization, GLEAN, Gay and Lesbian Employees at Microsoft, which is where I met my first boyfriend of 12 years. And though we're no longer together, we are still very close, and I talk to him often and cherish every moment that we shared. Today, most of you know my better half, Ron, who's also my current partner. And yes, we have the same name. He's not here today because he's now working on the weekends. But we've been together now about eight years. He's been a true e-ticket ride, to say the least. But dang it, if he hasn't just grabbed me by the heart. And I can say this because he's not here, but I'm going to marry that man someday soon. But before I wrap things up, I feel that I would do all of you a disservice if I didn't touch on the intricacies of being black and gay today in the United States of America. One is not the same as the other. And I would need many hours and days to cover the multitude of complex levels that make up the tapestry of racism in our country today. because racism is everywhere, and not just in the straight world. It's quite alive and well and kicking in the LGBTQ world as well. Both communities have often gripped news headlines, both good and bad, and one has sadly risen to the top over the other, particularly since November 2016, one of the darkest days of my life. When I walk into a room, you know right away that I'm black. You won't see that I'm gay. One I can keep to myself, the other I cannot. I don't generally have the luxury of hiding my race in places where it's not safe to be black. However, as a gay man, I can resort to passing as straight, at least temporarily, and borrow that privilege when safety demands. This isn't easy, and safety is a right many in both communities are too often denied. Continually facing discrimination is stressful, but the compounded effect of multiple layers of prejudice is particularly complicated. And let me be clear in stating, gay is not the new black. Let me further explain. I was called the N-word way before I was called the F-word. You have never seen and won't see heterosexual-only and gay-only water fountains, diners, buses, schools, in light of 75 years of oppressive Jim Crow laws. You have not and won't see homosexuals snatched away from their families at birth in the purpose of division and dehumanization. Homosexual men and women have never endured a slave trade for generations and witnessed their ancestors dying by the numbers during Middle Passage and being sold for raw goods. Homosexuals will never face a societal norm that allows and even promotes them to be beaten because they are seen as property and treated like cattle, with scripture as a basis for justification. As I said, gay is not the new black. Yes, I am both, and I am damn proud of who I am. I love that I am a black gay man. I welcome the fact that I fit well into some of the stereotypes. I can dance, and I can dress well. I love fried chicken, and I will go glamping with the most beautiful linens in an RV. So I thank you for letting me share this small slice of who I am and how I came to be here. I look forward to continuing my growth as a black gay man with my new family here at East Shore Unitarian Church.
I met Ron when I was working with Seattle Men's Chorus. I've known Ron for many years, and he is as fabulous as he appears. Brenda is one of my oldest friends here in Seattle. She and I became friends back before I even moved here, and I've performed with Brenda hundreds of times. She's got a fantastic voice. She is such a good person. Love her, because she is love. So, thank you, Brenda. We have two final guests to give some testimonials. We have Daphne Steck and Anne Connolly from the Bellevue PFLAG chapter. I'm not sure which one's going to speak first. They're duking it out.
Well, thank you so much. It's a real privilege to be here today. And I saw some wonderful familiar faces whose beautiful children I had the privilege to teach in the past, and friends from other circles. I've always had a very positive feeling about you people since the gay marriage referendum in Washington State. You had some sessions here that were very supportive. Thank you. I'm blown away by this. I have to tell you, this is one of the most beautiful services I've ever attended, and I've attended a lot. About 32 and a half years ago, my husband and I, of 46 years marriage today, were blessed with a beautiful baby girl, completing our family of two sons and two daughters. The wonderful thing about a fourth child is that in anticipating her arrival with three other children, eight and under, our life was such a hectic blur, we didn't spend a lot of time focusing on the specific attributes that this unique little person would possess. We didn't know her gender before her birth and didn't really care. When I first held Katie and looked into her beautiful blue eyes, I was filled with wonder. The future was open to all possibilities, and I couldn't wait to get to know her. Katie was athletic from the get-go. She would bike pedal her legs while nursing, aerobic eating. She took naturally to sports from a very early age, excelling in soccer, swimming, water polo, and basketball. She always had an affinity for animals, preferring her stuffies to dolls, and later relishing the mom and me Saturday morning trips we made to the zoo behind the scenes. Our home menagerie expanded with her presence. The kindergarten guinea pig arrived for a summer respite and enjoyed a permanent stay after we fell in love. Our golden retriever Maggie and later Cairn Terrier Joey were her constant companions. We're a book family. And when very young, Katie relished being read to for hours, and later when she learned to read, she could never get enough of stories and nonfiction books that expanded her world. She was an inquisitive learner and held herself to a high academic standard. She earned top grades in high school and graduated top of her nursing class at University of San Francisco. After working at Seattle's Children's for 5 years in ICU, she continued her education, earning academic recognition in graduate studies, becoming a nurse anesthetist. And though the baby of our family, Katie was always drawn to nurturing young children. She was the babysitter, nanny, in high demand, especially for families with lots of boys. Her athleticism and responsible, easygoing nature made her the perfect fit. I recall her coming home more than once after a demanding day, exclaiming, "Four boys and a dog, perfect family." I'd love that. In high school, Katie had a mixed circle of friends, never a romantic beau. As she continued into college, I hoped she might meet someone special, but her demanding college program didn't allow much time for social life. Then in her senior year, she came home on spring break and approached me and said, "I've been dating." My heart soared. Quickly, she added, "I have a girlfriend." Well, my immediate thoughts were a jumble. Oh, yay, she's found someone special in her life. Second, what does that mean for her future? But seeing the expectant joy in her face, I was able sincerely to tell her how very happy I was for her, and then ask, when do we get to meet this special young woman? Well, our lives were to be forever changed. In PFLAG, an organization which Daphne will talk more about and where I have found great support and enlightenment over these years, we have a saying: when a child comes out of the closet, the parent goes in. This was true for me. My pride in Katie never wavered, but on learning of her sexual orientation, my worry meter went into overdrive. What will she face in terms of discrimination, rejection, injustice in our too homophobic world? Also, I felt very strongly it was her truth to tell. Coming out to her father, siblings, extended family, circle of friends, and religious community was her place, not mine. But after a while, I lost track of who knew and who didn't. And there were some very awkward encounters. And I admit, I reacted like a mama bear, very protective, quick to become defensive if I sensed any disapproval or rejection of my precious, precious child. Over time, I have learned to speak my piece in peace. I stand up for those who may not have a voice or who suffer exclusion, but doing so with diplomacy and conviction. Don't mess with me. But I do believe that ignorance is not malice. So informing, teaching, spreading the truth is part of my mission. More than anything, I want Katie to feel comfortable in her own skin, free to be fully the woman she was born to be. And early on, I realized that the best way I could do that was to manage my emotions and deal with the unanticipated knowledge that her life was going to follow a different track than I had imagined. This was critical for her well-being. So just like any other child, gay or straight, she suffered through a painful breakup at one point. I suffered for her broken heart. Then I rejoiced as I witnessed her resilience as she picked herself up and went on. When she started dating her now wife, Kim, I wondered what their future would look like. Thankfully, due to the SCOTUS decision, these young women were able to celebrate a civil marriage where they were Mauied 2 years ago in a lovely private beach ceremony. We witnessed their vows, making a commitment to building their future together. and I'm heartened that they now enjoy the same civil rights in our country that our straight children have had, at least in the area of marriage. I grieve that in many states in our country, and in too many countries, as has been noted here, basic human rights are still in jeopardy. In too many places, it's still okay to fire someone, deny housing or other provisions of business services because of someone's sexual orientation or gender identity. This grieves me, but I have stood up. I'm a vocal advocate for the rights of all God's precious rainbow children. Probably the aspect of having a lesbian daughter that has caused me the greatest pain is the fact that my faith community, our faith community, the Catholic Church, is not very welcoming to our LGBTQ children. The Church teaches that the dignity of each person is to be respected, but the line is drawn when a gay person chooses to engage in an intimate relationship. Officially, the path of a celibate lifestyle is the only morally approved for gay persons. Well, I reject this line of thinking, and I feel no guilt in doing so. This is not a basic tenet of our faith or mine. Though some use Old Testament verse to condemn gays, not once does Jesus mention them in the Gospels. He does, however, show great compassion for those on the margins, and he openly welcomed outcasts to his table. I believe religion is about relationships with God and with each other, not rules. Personal conscience dictates right and wrong, and I believe that God is love. That love extends to each and every person and is unconditional. I remain in the church in my upbringing, and my daughter respects that affiliation. She knows I speak out for inclusion and am active in a national support organization of Catholic parents of LGBTQ children, aptly named Fortunate Families. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having Ann and I here today. It's an honor. I'm a board member of PFLAG Bellevue Eastside, which is a chapter of PFLAG National. Some of you may not know that, but that's actually our nation's largest family and ally organization. PFLAG is often the very first place that people turn to when they or a loved one comes out as lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer, or questioning. And fact is where I turned when my own son came out at age 15 and overnight lost all his friends and became severely bullied and despondent, even suicidal. PFLAG is also a place where LGBTQ people, family, friends, and allies keep coming well after their first meeting for ongoing connection, to give and receive support, and to work for change. PFLAG believes we're all on a journey to LGBTQ equality, even people that don't know it. You're on a journey. And wherever you are on that path, we meet you there with patience, acceptance, and love. After all, at one point, all PFLAGers were taking our very first step on that journey, too. When we or a loved one comes out as LGBTQ, we can experience many deep emotions, consumed with fear, terrified of loss, and yet unburdened and even elated by the profound awareness that we can move forward in the truth of our lives. We can also feel very alone. Through PFLAG, we discover we are not alone, and something powerful happens when we meet other LGBTQ people and their families. We see a future for ourselves and the people we love that is bright and worthy. Our hearts grow, and we become stronger and better people, and yes, we see this happen all the time. That's why so many of us one-time newcomers become lifelong PFLAG members, to connect with this resilient, brave, generous, and fabulous community and continue our great work towards civil rights. PFLAG is not affiliated with any religion or political group. Our mission is very clear: full equality for LGBTQ people through our three tenets, support, education, and advocacy. We support parents, family, friends, and allies of LGBTQ people, as well as LGBTQ people themselves, particularly through our monthly meetings on the third Thursday of each month. We educate through our website, pflagbellevue.org, which has extensive resources and tools, through our Facebook page where we post positive stories of change, through our information tables that we set up at community events, our booklets, and guest speakers at our membership meetings who speak on issues pertinent to the LGBTQ community. and we advocate for members of the LGBT community wherever we are and however we can. Whether we travel to Olympia to meet elected officials on lobby day, march in local parades, we're doing that, Derby Days, July 4th, join us, or we wear rainbow pins to start conversations with strangers. Above all, PFLAG is love. That's why we believe in the power of respectful dialogue to engage and persuade people. We trust in the truth of our stories to open hearts and minds, and we keep building bridges, working for that world where human diversity is celebrated and all people are respected, valued, and affirmed. So in closing, if you need support, please consider PFLAG as a resource and know that we are here for you. And if you want to be part of this great change, please feel free to join us in our work to whatever degree you can, because wherever you are in your journey, you are loved by PFLAG.